morning. My name is Daniel Sperry, and I am one of the third-year residents at McKady as well. John Gardner let me say that without HIPAA violating that I was the one that took care of him, and I didn't get a cent out of that $13,000. And I want to correct Ben as well. We actually have 6 weeks, 2 days, 9 hours, and 12 minutes until we're done. So I'm very excited to go on to urgent care. That's what I've planned to do, and I've accepted a position in the southern part of Salt Lake County. I'm originally from Salt Lake, grew up in Orem, went to medical school in upstate New York, Syracuse, New York. And as a third year, we choose an area of concentration for our extra clinics, if that's not obstetrics, and that actually can be one. So mine is has been chosen sports medicine. And so we do an extra amount of sports clinics a month, and a complaint we often have is that young athletes or children will come in with a complaint of concussion. So I'm going to talk about today concussions. First, I have no financial disclosures. First, we'll talk about the diagnosis and treatment of concussions. Many of you probably attended Dr. Sherman's clinic that and speech about it yesterday. We'll talk about some of the Utah laws that have been passed, so it's important to know as providers when we are in the state of Utah, and also some new guidelines from the American Academy of Pediatrics. And I'll talk about, so our clinic, we've been trying to make an algorithm to figure out how to make sure children that come in don't get lost through the cracks and get adequate concussion management. First, I'd like to start with a case. So a 16-year-old female came into sports clinic. I'd seen her not after the initial concussion, but she had had a concussion in October 2012. She had crashed on her ATV, had a momentary loss of consciousness, and started getting a headache a day later, but evidently had not had full adequate rest from her sports activities in school, because 1 month later, she got hit by another player during a soccer match, and for days to weeks after that had fatigue, restless sleep, light and noise sensitivity, and was not doing well in school. And so the parents and the athlete tried to figure out what to do now, but I also want to talk about what we could have done to prevent this, so it's important to know and diagnose concussions early. Some facts about concussions: between 1.6 million and 3.8 million sports-related concussions occur in the U.S. each year. Another name for it is mild TBI, or traumatic brain injury. They used to be graded from 1 to 3, and depending on the severity of it, that was how we treated it, but the new guidelines say a concussion is a concussion, and we treat it as such, no matter how severe. Athletes often don't report their concussions because they want to play in the game and don't want to have time away from that. The concussions are more likely to occur in organized sports than in leisure sports, and up to 20% of football players get concussions each season. So that's kind of scary, and definitely not 20% report it. Sports-related concussions may be more common in girls than boys in similar sports that they play, but boys often participate in more high-risk sports such as boxing and football. And high school players in American football specifically are more likely to have concussions than college-age players, possibly because they're still developing, possibly because there's more high school players out there than there are college players. The pathophysiology of concussions, so that's either a direct force, so something hits the head, or there's indirect, where there's a coup contra coup type injury, where the brain is getting jostled inside the head. And that disrupts the axons and the neurofilaments, and that causes swelling, degeneration, transection of those actual neurons. And the inflammatory reaction that occurs causes free radicals to accumulate, and you get sodium leaking out of the cell and sodium and calcium going into the cell, and this is quite disruptive. Some of the more common sports for concussions, so girls hockey, girls soccer, American football, boys hockey, some of those are the most common for concussions. They did a study when I was looking through the literature that showed that heading of a soccer ball was not statistically significant in causing concussions, but there are anecdotal evidence, and that's how people say they got them, is from that, but there are other ways if players collide or other mechanisms. But other sports, girls basketball, wrestling, lacrosse, volleyball and baseball can get concussions, pretty much any contact sport. So symptoms of it can be varied. Some of the more common ones are headaches, dizziness, imbalance, nausea, vomiting, fatigue, difficulty sleeping, blurry vision, light and noise sensitivity. Often these symptoms come not after the initial hit, but in the days and weeks after. Hearing difficulties, numbness, seizures show a more severe type of injury. Difficulties with attention or concentration, depression, anxiety, agitation, aggression. And these can be quite debilitating for the student or for the athlete. And often the treatment is important to initiate first. Most of these will resolve on their own. We'll talk about how we can help facilitate that. So the technical diagnosis of a concussion is that you have an external force causing head injury with new onset of confusion, disorientation, change in consciousness, amnesia, neurologic dysfunction, or subjective symptoms that they report. They can have any or all of these. It's important to ask the athlete about these after they get hit and examine them. We'll talk about some of the exams that we can do. Red flags to know of, especially for athletic trainers on the field, to know when to send them to the ER or to their primary care physician, are a worsening headache. So a headache will still be there, but if it's getting a lot worse over the minutes to hours, seizures, difficulty awakening them, repeated vomiting, so more than one episode, slurred speech, cannot recognize people or places, increasing confusion, weakness, numbness, other neurologic type complaints, unusual behavior change, or if they were out for more than 30 seconds. So we have these special tests that athletic trainers can do, and we as primary care physicians or specialists can do. For all tests, it's important to have a baseline if that's possible. And some clinics out there, some physical therapy locations will allow any athlete to come in and take a baseline test so that if they do get a concussion, that can be the scores can be compared. There's something called the SAC sideline measure that trainers or coaches can do. So it's a standardized assessment that checks orientation, immediate memory, concentration, delayed recall. It's a quick neurologic test and checks for exertional maneuvers. It's quite easy to administer. There's other ones called the post-concussion symptom scale, so that just grades on the symptoms that they're having, such as headache or dizziness. And then there's the Westmead post-traumatic amnesia scale, asks questions such as name, place, month, year, town, age, date of birth, and time. So these are just all different things we can do, not just to have one. There's one that often the neuropsychologists will use or the physical therapist called the acute concussion evaluation. So it's a form that the athlete fills out part of it with their symptoms, and then the practitioner fills out the rest. It talks about the injury, how it happened, the symptoms and how severe they are, and risk factors that they may have already had, such as other concussions or prior diagnoses or neurologic problems. One of the ones that is really important for us and probably heard about is the SCAT. It used to be SCAT-2 over the last few years. Recently, SCAT-3 came out. So it talks about subjective symptoms. It takes into account the Glasgow Coma Score, the SAC, as we talked about just a few minutes ago, and evaluation of balance and coordination with the BEST test. The SCAT-2 was done in 2008, and it was updated and revised in 2013. Some of the questions were worded a little differently, and it includes a neck examination, a modified balance examination, and some background health questions. So the old SCAT-2 was for younger athletes, but now the SCAT-3 is meant for 13 and older, and there is one called the child SCAT-3 if an athlete is 12 or younger. So there, and these are all available. I just Googled it and looked at these online, free for everyone. And there's a SCAT-2 app, so I looked on my iPhone, but there's not a SCAT-3 one yet, but it's expected to come out soon. But still, it's a good, even if you just use the SCAT-2, it's a good assessment of a athlete's status. There are computerized tests that we'll often have them do in the office. So they come in, it takes about 20, 30 minutes. The one that often you probably heard of is the impact test, and that's showing a picture of an athlete doing it. Where's the blazer? There we go. And it talks about some memory questions, motor speed, reaction time, impulse control, and then it asks them if they've had any symptoms, which prints out on a page that we get. There's other ones called the Computerized Cognitive Assessment Tool, the Concussion Resolution Index, and the Automated Neuropsychological Assessment Metrics. If you just look, you can Google computerized concussion test, and there's multiple ones out there if your clinic wants to have one. As we talked about before, there's the BEST test, which is a physical exam finding. We can see where there's six 20-second trials of balance on both firm ground and on foam. The prognosis of getting a concussion, if you've had three or more prior concussions, that is associated with a threefold risk of future concussion just by having them and a slower recovery. There's what's known out there as second impact syndrome. It's not well defined and it's not 100% for sure that that's going to happen, but there's possible permanent damage that can occur if you've not recovered from the prior concussion adequately. But there's definitely a post-traumatic sequelae you can get called a post-concussion syndrome. You can get prolonged headaches, vertigo, other symptoms if it's not adequately treated. So the Utah law in 2011, it was called the Protection of Athletes with Head Injuries Act, and it requires amateur sports organizations and schools, except for ski resorts for some reason, to adopt and enforce a concussion and head injury policy and get written approval of the policy by parents or legal guardians. And then when a head injury occurs, the child must be removed from play and may only return after written clearance from a qualified healthcare provider who has been educated in the management of concussions in the last 3 years. And going to Dr. Sharman's talk yesterday accounts for that. In 2013, they strengthened the law in a quite scary way, I guess, for us. So instead of saying if the child is suspected of sustaining a concussion, it says if the organization or agent knows or should have known. So you have to have a crystal ball, I guess, or at least be very vigilant in knowing what is going on the field. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommended in 2013 that children should rest from school. It was known that they need to rest from their physical activities, but often they need one of these education plans. So going through a neuropsychologist is helpful, getting these and coordinating with the school. There's under the American Disabilities Act, you can have help for them so they can not just miss school, but have things done at home to help them. So for physical exertion, it's recommended that they limit their activity and then do a return to play protocol, often starting with light exercise, then gradually going up until there's full contact and making sure there's no symptoms at each point as you're moving up. For some of the school accommodations to help with brain rest, they recommend limiting homework, reading, loud noise, texting. I mean, we're inundated with technology and with stimuli around us, and even just simple things like that can cause the symptoms to get worse. I got this from one of our neuropsychologists, Dr. Bushman. He recommends kind of a similar stage thing where you go for a certain number of hours a day and times of the week to get back into the academic sphere. So the reason I chose this topic, we're working in our clinic about trying to catch those athletes who maybe don't have an athletic trainer, who don't have the same resources as some high schools do. And so we wanted to make our clinic aware of these other providers, such as neuropsychologists, that are out there in the community, and to be able to help get a referral system and a central location so we can have the testing required for a baseline and to compare. We're still kind of working out how it will work with logistics, whether there's going to be a global fee or flat rate, because different providers have different ways they can bill and things they can bill for, such as athletic trainers and physical therapists. So just kind of to show you a general, the one we're making is a little more complicated, but you know, you diagnose the concussion. If there's any red flags, then they need to be seen immediately. Otherwise, you obtain the history, possibly compare to a baseline, and do some of these basic tests, at least the probably impact test, the SCAT-3, and the BEST test. And if they have symptoms, then they need to wait until the symptoms are gone to really make sure they can go on in the treatment algorithm. But once the symptoms are gone, we make sure to repeat the testing until they pass those tests. If they pass, then they can go to the graded return to play, cleared by either an athletic trainer or a MD or DO. If the symptoms don't resolve after a month, we often will refer. So this actual patient, the 16-year-old, was referred to a neuropsychologist, had some slight improvement, but could we have prevented some long-lasting symptoms if she had rested early? For the more complicated cases, we can refer to neuropsychologists, visual therapy, speech therapy, vestibular rehabs, neurologists, depending on what the symptoms are. It's just important to be aware of it and diagnose it early and treat it early. Thank you.